and welcome to the fourth episode of AD Game Club, the monthly video game club podcast where we choose a game from the past to play and talk about in depth. I am your host, Andrew, and joining me today is my best friend, co-host, and nanomachine enthusiast, David.
Yep, it's all about nanomachines, son. In fact, that's a reference to one of the games I haven't even played yet. Someday I'll think of something clever to say here.
Okay. What game is it that you're referencing? I don't recognize it.
It was in Rising. One of the enemies actually says, nanomachines, son. Just as a general explanation for everything.
I found out in doing research for this game that Rising Revengeance takes place after MGS4, which really confuses me, but I'll come back to that later. So, at the top of the show, I would like to mention that AD Game Club has a Facebook page. You can find it at facebook.com/ADGameClub. There you can keep up to date with us throughout the month and participate in the conversation by leaving comments. And we really would like to have some comments.
Yes, feedback is great. And just to know that people are listening, if anyone's listening, which I hope so.
I hope so as well. So, as kind of pointed out earlier, the game for this month, Metal Gear Solid 4, came out in 2008 for the PS3. The back of the box states that this is going to be his final battle, and that a hero must stand alone, which final battle, but he really doesn't stand alone.
No, I mean, to be fair, at the end, he kind of crawls, and he's still not even alone at that point, really.
No.
he's more the grouchy old man that keeps complaining about how alone he is, while his, 50 close friends and family nod and go,
Yeah, he has some really good friends, crazy good friends, and it was really great seeing them come from all over the past series into this one final game. It was pretty great.
Yeah, it definitely, and I mean, I think Hideo Kojima has said after every game, starting with Metal Gear Solid 2, has said, oh no, this is the end, I'm not going to make any more Metal Gear Solid games. And we all know how that turned out. But this definitely felt like bringing together all of the loose ends and tying it all up and just finishing everything.
On that topic,
Like you said, that makes it a little weird when I also found out after the fact that Metal Gear Rising takes place afterward, but that's about Raiden anyway.
Yeah. I actually remember it as, I remember an article while researching MGS4 stating that it was after MGS3 that Kojima said that was the end. He didn't want to do Metal Gear anymore. And they even appointed a different director, I guess, for MGS4, because Konami wanted to continue doing it, because there was fan outcry of, hey, we want more Metal Gear Solid. So Konami was all for it. Kojima was like, hey, okay, here, use a different director, though. But in the end, that didn't work out for him.
And then, of course, he kept making games until, he finally had a fight with Konami in the middle of making MGS5 and left. And I guess, he finally got his wish in the worst way.
Kind of, yeah. I've heard that MGS5 doesn't even have a proper ending.
Yeah, I've heard it's really, really good, to play as a game, but the story was just unfinished.
But we should pull it back a little bit and get back to MGS4. So, David, what was your familiarity going into MGS4? I mean, it's a pretty big game, so.
Well, it was a long time ago. I don't think I got it when it first came out because I didn't get, I'm pretty sure it was a PS3 launch title or close to, and I didn't get a PS3 for a while. So when I did eventually get a PlayStation 3, one of the games I grabbed was Metal Gear Solid 4. Although I had heard a lot of mixed things, like it was just totally nonsensical or it was really good, and so I started playing it and got distracted, and I didn't get past like the intro, and it just fell onto my backlog until now. So I'm glad I finally went back to play it.
I remember that when it came out, everyone was talking about it. There was a lot of complaining about the load times and that it wasn't multi-platform, but overall, everyone was saying that it was the best in the series, and I really wanted it, but at the time, I didn't have a PS3. I had a 360. Actually, I didn't even have a 360 in 2008, did I? I don't... That would have been right around when I got a 360. So I didn't have a PS3 until 2009 to 2010. But this was definitely one of those games that I wanted. But I, at that point, also wanted to wait until the subsistence or the substance version came out. The director's cut came out, which never truly did for MGS4. They did eventually patch in trophies and the ability to front load the install, but there wasn't the sort of series staple of here's the director's cut never came out for this or 5.
Mm-hmm.
But it makes sense it didn't come out for 5, as we just discussed.
Yes.
But I did know before going into this game that this was supposed to be the last chapter in Solid Snake's story. I knew that he was old, and I had heard enough like conversation about the game to think that he dies at the end of the game.
And that is also, to be fair, really played up during the entire game.
Yes, it really is. As far as the series as a whole, I actually have you to thank for even playing any of the Metal Gear Solid games, even though you would mention MGS3 the most, but that was enough for me to want to play through the entire series. So thank you for that. If you would like to go into why you loved MGS3 so much.
It was just, well, the main thing was, as I've told you many, many times, the boss fight with the end. That was just such a long and tense fight, and my favorite boss fight of any video game. I won't go into the whole story now, but it was, you know, it just really stuck with me and felt like a really unique experience. Although I think there's been more of those sort of slow tactical boss fights in other games that I've played since then, including a few of them in MGS4, of course. I don't remember specifically when I played the first Metal Gear Solid, but I remember playing MGS2 when visiting a friend before I even had a PS2, and it was just, I don't even know if that was before or after I played the first Metal Gear Solid, and I managed to get as far as the... what was it? You know, the arsenal gear section where everything just makes absolutely no goddamn sense.
No sense at that point.
Eventually, I did get my own copy of the Substance version of MGS2 and had a lot of fun with that. And even the VR mission stuff, that was also pretty weird but fun. And, you know, MGS3, like I said, and the Subsistence version of that, so... Yeah, I was also a little disappointed when there was no director's cut of 4 either.
Mm-hmm. My history with the series was, again, like, I know it wasn't until high school when you were telling me about MGS3 that I even went and sat down to play MGS1 for the PlayStation. I most fondly remember playing it on the PSP. I did play through that one multiple times, including my favorite version, the GameCube, the Twin Snakes, that I feel is easily the best Metal Gear Solid game. It has a great story that, I mean, it's self-contained, it has great controls and visuals thanks to using the MGS2 engine. Just overall, my favorite version of any Metal Gear Solid game. MGS2, I didn't get around to playing, though, until about 2010. And then MGS3, I didn't truly play until last year, 2015. And part of the reason I never really felt the need to play MGS3 was in high school, you actually took me over to your house one night and we marathoned through the extra DVD movie version of the game, which I still think is crazy that there was a movie version of the game.
Yeah, it's kind of one of those, themes that runs through it with I think Hideo Kojima just like really wants the series to be cinematic and movie-like, and 3 was definitely the most in that vein, since it, didn't have all of this sort of nonsense. It didn't have a lot of the meta series stuff, and it was very much a spy movie. And so, and it was kind of weird that it wasn't even a DVD, it was just a PS2 disc, but it was the cutscenes with some clips of the actual gameplay in between, just enough to string them together, and he got his movie.
Yeah. That is very true. And especially in MGS4, I remember hearing that there was like an hour-long cutscene. But I don't actually remember experiencing this hour-long cutscene in playing it, 'cause it's so engrossing that even if it was that long, it doesn't feel like a long cutscene, whereas there are other games I've played where 10 minutes and it feels like, oh my God, kill me.
Right.
How about we move on to things that we liked about MGS4? And I would like you to start out.
So, my favorite part of the whole game was, appropriately enough, the whole of Act 4, where you go back to Shadow
Oh
Moses.
yes, easily the best part of this game.
And it was just it was great because it played on what nostalgia really is, which is just remembering the best parts, not like the whole thing. It was just like, oh, I remember that, and I remember that. And of course, when you get there, Snake actually has audible flashbacks while you're playing, and it's just like, oh yeah, that scene. And also just the intro to that mission where you start off, it just goes back to PS1 graphics,
That's exactly
and
what I wanted to bring up.
you play through that. And it was also great because I didn't even remember like the specific layout, so it was like, oh yeah, first they remind you of exactly what it was like, and then you crawl through the snow for a couple of minutes, and then you go, oh wow, they really did recreate it. I know how exact it was because they just showed me.
Yeah,
In
and
fact, I know where this secret vent is.
yep. Down to the controls. Like I had expected when it came up that it would still be the current controls, but no, they went back to the original controls as well, which really surprised me. It really was like you had just put in the first game disc of MGS1. But yeah, I can't agree more that Shadow Moses was an excellent moment of especially going down into the base where you can see how the certain areas are destroyed because of your actions, like the hallway where where you were what was the name of the robot samurai? I want to say Zero
You
for
mean,
some reason.
oh, Gray Fox,
Gray Fox, yes,
the
where
cyborg
yeah.
ninja. I'm pretty sure that robot samurais are the natural enemies of cyborg ninjas.
But yeah, you see the destruction there, and it's like you remember what it was like seeing that in MGS1, and now you see it realized in HD, and the room where you found Otacon, the room where you fired off the missile, like scenes that I don't even remember now, but playing through the game, I remembered those scenes, those areas, and just amazing, in my opinion, that they decided to go back and do that.
Fighting the, what was it, Laughing Wolf or whatever the wolf was, in the same
Oh,
snowfield where you fought Sniper Wolf.
Crying Wolf.
Crying Wolf, yes.
Yes.
Actually, after that fight, I I forgot to do a bunch of codec conversations, which I usually do in these games because they're great, but also there's only really one person to call since Rose doesn't say anything
She
interesting.
doesn't. That was one of the things that I'm going to bring up as a did not like, but continue on.
So I called Otacon right after the crying wolf fight, and he was just like, "So, wasn't that where you fought the tank?" And Snake's like, "Yeah." And Otacon's like, "How do you take down a tank?" And he's like, "Well, I threw a lot of grenades." And it's just like there's a couple of conversations about the tank, and then about the Hind D helicopter, where Otacon's basically going, "You realize that was completely insane, right?" And Snake's like, "I don't know. I just shot it." It's just like taking a moment to acknowledge that some of those fights in the original game were ridiculous. Of just, a foot soldier against a tank or a helicopter.
In each Metal Gear Solid game, there is a sniper battle. And as you previously said, MGS3 has easily the best sniper battle in which there are multiple ways to approach it. The way that the actual combat itself is done is pretty ingenious, of like lighting and having to like really stalk your prey. I didn't get that out of this sniper battle w against Crying Wolf.
No, it was a little weird because I didn't even realize it until I talked to Otacon in that battle, but he says something about how, oh, she can smell you,
Yeah, so
so you
stay
have
down or
to,
upwind or downwind. Yeah, you stay downwind.
yeah, stay downwind, except that the wind is always changing and that doesn't really help you find her at all. So if you don't know where she is, you can't stay downwind. And if you did, the wind would change.
Her crying is what helped me find her constantly. Like,
Ah.
finding her was never the problem. The fact that she's always moving around, except for when she's shooting you, like, that's where I had a problem.
Well,
Yeah.
anyway, this is actually the I did another thing that I really liked was similar to the end fight was the section where Naomi is kidnapped and you have to track her. And it also reminded me of one of the VR training segments from the original Metal Gear Solid that I loved, which was the mystery segment. And there was always like a twist or a trick that you had to figure out to find the right soldier to grab. And so the tracking segment was really fun because you had to sneak around very carefully, and there were several times where just because I was using the night vision, I could see someone lying in wait and take them out with a tranquilizer before they noticed me. And then there were a few times where it was like, oh, the tracks have changed. Now you need to figure out who it is you need to follow out of these tracks.
Yeah, there's the tracking segment was definitely a highlight. In fact, a lot of Act 2 was, I would say, perfectly paced, in that you started out where you're kind of sneaking past a possible battle into a real battle, into Naomi's office, I guess you would call it, where you finally find her. You have a pretty good cutscene, and then boss battle, and it's a good Laughing Octopus, I think,
Oh,
is
yeah.
my favorite of the boss battles. Just that, how her camouflage sort of like perfectly combats your own camouflage, and it was really great because she it would calm down, she'd be hiding, and I would then get the opportunity to go look for her, and it was always like, what looks out of place? What wasn't here before? What has the body heat that shouldn't? And I thought that that was a pretty fantastic boss battle, and it was a good pacing. And then after all of that action you've been dealing with, you go into a more subtle, at a slow pace, tracking segment. So yeah, I thought Act 2 was really well done. Especially coming off of Act 1. So, But yeah, and also there's some good comedy points. Like if you take one course, you'll find Naomi's bra for some reason. And that doesn't even make sense because she's not wearing a bra in the previous cutscene. But okay. And then there's also a moment that I really didn't expect where I took a I followed some tracks to a UFO like crop circle where the tracks then just end, and I guess someone got abducted. Did you happen to see the crop circle?
No, not at
Oh,
all. That's
wow.
fantastic.
Yeah, there's even a little like how in Act 4 you're getting those audio cues. When you see this crop circle, you get a sort of like radiostatic audio cue of like what happened during this abduction. So, yeah, I really enjoyed that. I really enjoyed and at that point I had gone full in, not even trying to sneak. I was tranking everyone who moved. So, I felt like that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, another thing that I enjoyed, one thing that I will say I liked more about that was improved in 4 over MGS3, in my opinion, was being able to just buy the guns that you wanted, because mostly because I
And
could
the
buy
ammo.
the oh and definitely being able to buy ammo, but mostly because I was able to buy a tranquilizer sniper rifle,
I did as well.
whereas in 3, the only way to get that was to do a non-lethal takedown of the end, which coincidentally is the most useful place to have a tranquilizer sniper rifle.
Yep.
Whereas in 3, like during the, I was actually pretty bad at finding laughing octopus, and I think a couple of times I went like, oh hey, there's tentacles here, and I think it was like a decoy because I just got attacked when I shot at the thing, but at one point I saw her hiding as the main figure in the painting at the end of one of the hallways.
Oh, I never saw that
So
one.
I saw, and so I was like, oh good, I finally saw her without her, attacking me. So I just laid down, took out my sniper rifle, and lined up the shot.
Oh, okay. I didn't even buy the sniper rifle at that point. I bought it very shortly after that. But for that fight, one of my favorite, two of my favorites, I guess, was one, she's hiding in a box or as a box. But the giveaway is one of her tentacles is coming out of the box.
Okay, see, that was one where I thought I found her, but I must not have been shooting the right spot because her stamina didn't go down and she just attacked me.
Another one was there's the whole MRI machine, and she hides as a component of the MRI machine with one of her tentacles going up to the roof, looking like a power cable or something. I thought
See,
that was pretty good.
I thought I saw that too. Maybe I was just bad at figuring out which part was
To
actually
shoot.
her,
Oh,
which part to
okay.
shoot.
I still think that was pretty good, but
It was, yeah.
yeah, I really loved the fact that very early in the game I could buy that the tranquilizer sniper rifle. I can't remember what it was called. It started with an M.
The Mosin Nagant.
There you go. But most especially was that since I was always using tranq darts of whatever size, it was nice that I was able to always buy more. And even in the middle of a boss battle, if I ran low on something, I could just buy more. Sadly, you couldn't buy more rations, but
Right, and there were a few segments where you're, which it kind of makes sense, like when you're standing on top of Drebin's tank, car, whatever, you couldn't actually stop and buy ammo from Drebin.
Oh, really? I didn't even try then.
Because I think at that point I was, what was it? Oh, it was like, oh man, I need more stun grenades so that I can stop these guys attacking me non-lethally. Whoops, I can't buy anymore.
Oh, really? See, I was, I had already killed a couple of people, so I didn't really care about the no kill run. So, but overall, I wanted to try and be a trank user, but all of the vehicle sections, they would provide you with some sort of unlimited ammo weapon, and I would just use that for those sections because it's like, you're kind of telling me to do it this way, so I'm going to do it this way.
Yeah, the part I personally I was kind of like, oh hey, you're finally giving me, non-living machines that I can just blow the crap of without ruining my run. Awesome. Although in that segment, there were some like people in power suits that you can't tranquilize, and shooting them counts as killing them, and basically the only way to get through that non-lethally is to just wait for Drebin to get tired of waiting for you to kill them and keep driving.
Oh wow. It doesn't, some of those times where he stops doesn't make sense. It's like, you're kind of clear to just power through anyways. But anyways, it was, I did enjoy the vehicle sections here. I thought they were, again, good for the pacing.
Yeah, Act 2 was probably my second favorite after Act 4, just because it was there's a good variety of pacing and tone.
Yes. So one of the things that I want to bring up as being a favorite for MGS4 was the controls. I remember playing MGS3, the HD version, and just absolutely hating the controls. I was constantly, I the only thing I can guess, I haven't gone back to MGS2 to try the controls there, but I swear something changed between those two because I was constantly pressing the wrong buttons. I was trying to get into a viewpoint that the game just wouldn't allow, like trying to sneak in grass, the way that the camera would go down, and I was just constantly having problems with controlling Snake in MGS3. But here in MGS4, I never once had a problem with controlling Snake. He controlled perfectly, and the fact that they gave you like when you're prone and you just want to inch forward, he inches forward. There's such variability in the speed, and they have like such fluid motions for things. Like one of the things that struck me very early on was just how much time did they spend sculpting his butt? 'Cause like,
Yeah.
oh my
Oh, that
God.
his butt is literally deadly. When I was sneaking around, looking for the rat pit unit, there's a section where there's a bunch of lasers, and Otacon's like, don't mess with those. They probably need those. Just find another way. But I thought I could probably like sneak under that and see what's past there. So I got down and I started inching forward, and the problem is when you are inching forward, his butt goes up just a little. And so I was slowly inching under the wire, and then his ass went up and hit the trip wire and everything exploded.
Awesome. I was really impressed by just the controls. And then the other thing that really impressed me with this game was the soundtrack. They went
Oh,
back
yeah.
throughout the MGS history and used a lot of that music again, or redid it, or it was, so I could not stop humming the Metal Gear Solid tunes while playing this game, or when I wasn't playing this game, just constantly, I could not get the music out of my head, and I loved it.
And they even found an excuse at the end, which is one of
Yes.
the things I'm gonna mention better. I'm happy they found an excuse to bring back the Snake Eater theme, because that was, like I said about it, MGS3 being just a spy movie, that was the most obvious Bond movie element, and I loved it.
Completely agree.
And also, kind of going back to the controls versus MGS3, I kind of liked how the Octo Camo is basically bringing back the camo system from 3, but they're just like, well, A, we don't want you to have to deal with that manually again, and B, it's the future. So it's essentially the same system, but all you have to do is like, hunker down, and it will automatically find the right camo.
And I really liked the fact that, just like in previous games, when you do the non-lethal, you'll get an extra weapon or a piece of gear. And for fighting Laughing Octopus, you get the Octo Face Cam, so you could be 100% that sort of camouflage automatic, though it never really made sense. Or maybe you get that automatically. I don't know, actually.
I think you get the face camo and the extra weapons automatically, because those are actually part of the plot in a few cases.
I was actually like I so one of the things that I did was I did non-lethal all of the bosses, especially since the bosses are these beauties, which I'm sure we're going to talk about later. But I couldn't convince myself to ever say yes, I should kill them. But then yeah, I was unclear as to what the extras were, because I guess they also gave you a face mask of the beauties.
Right, that's
So
what you
that
get
must have
for
been the
the.
non-lethal, huh?
Yeah, that's what you get for the non-lethal takedown on the beauties. Although, actually, they do not count it as a kill for taking down the beast portion lethally. Although, obviously,
Oh,
if you
really?
if you kill like one of their minions, then that will count. But yeah, if because you know, obviously, if you blow up their armor and then they crawl out of the armor and you shoot them with the tranquilizer, you didn't kill them. But
Huh.
there is a special reward for taking them down non-lethally, which I will get to with the parts that we don't like later.
Oh, okay.
Just because it was a little frustrating.
That wasn't clear to me, I guess. I was always trying to non-lethal both, thinking that that was how you non-lethal. I knowing that, then the beast forms would have been a lot easier with real weapons. Oh.
Especially that there's like an anti-air missile launcher that you got at one point that was like, well, there's really only one enemy in the game to use this against, but I'm also going for hardcore non-lethal, so oh well.
Huh. Yeah. Maybe this started out as a not like a as a thing I liked, but now I'm starting to think maybe that wasn't a good like. Oh well. So one last thing that I wanted to bring up as far as myself, as far as things that I really loved about this game, was the cutscenes. We kind of said it before, but I just loved how over the top and Japanese these cutscenes are throughout the game.
Yeah, those were great. There, admittedly, there were a few points where it was like, I realized that was the joke, but it was still like, okay, I get it. There are a lot of soldiers with a lot of guns. You don't need to show me more soldiers with more guns showing up. I know Liquid is just going to disable all of them. But nope, still going. More helicopters, more floodlights, more guns. I get it. I get it.
But then the way that he decides to take out the helicopters, for example, where it's just like his hands in the shape of a gun, and he goes pow, and then the helicopter loses control, and it's
Oh
just
yeah,
like,
that was
ah, oh,
great.
so good.
And then the helicopter falls, spirals slowly into the water, and you go, oh, that wasn't as bad as I thought. And then it explodes.
I loved the cutscenes, and then like the fight, but every fight Raiden is in is over the top and doesn't make sense, but it is so fun to watch.
Yeah, I think Vamp, like bringing back Vamp didn't, well, I just wasn't very invested in his whole, like, you know, immortality is so hard plot, but I'm sure that the reason they brought Vamp back was just so that they could have this ridiculous fight, or two ridiculous fights between him and Raiden, where they're both just stabbing each other over and over.
The second fight doesn't even make sense, though, but I did enjoy the fact that it was like a split screen where you're doing your own thing fighting against geckos while he's playing out his fight on the other half of the screen. That
That was
was
just
pretty
mean.
cool.
That was cool, but it was also mean because it's like, man, I want to see this badass fight, but I
Yeah.
also want to not die.
And it was also hard to tell, like, am I trying to kill a certain number of geckos and this is like procedurally generated, or do I have to just keep fighting until the fight is over? Like, couldn't really tell a lot of
Right. Or am I
the
waiting for them
time.
to be over, or am I going to screw up Raiden's fight by not killing the geckos fast enough?
Yeah. So, was there anything else you want to bring up as things you liked about MGS4?
Also, kind of related to the cutscenes, the psych gauge didn't really come up in play. I'm sure it's a kind of like the stamina in 3. It's more of a detriment in like extreme big boss mode. But I just loved when
Yeah.
it would come up during cutscenes and someone would be like, "Huh, more like Old Snake," and then you see his psych go down.
Yeah.
Or when Drebin gave him the like really cool custom M4 gun and Snake's like looking at it and he holds it up and pulls the trigger and nothing happens and his psych goes down. And then you have a whole conversation and Drebin like enables it for you and then Snake fires the gun and his psych goes back up. That and the Psycho Mantis cutscene after the Screaming Mantis fight was great, which was completely pointless, but it was similar to the conversation you had with Otacon earlier, where he's like, "Okay, Snake, hang on. Now you need to swap out the discs." And Snake's like, "What? But there's only one disc." "Oh yeah, it's on a double-sided Blu-ray. Isn't technology amazing?" Which was why I was thinking this is probably a PS3 launch title.
It was pretty early on, and it was also one of those things that I remember there being interviews of. Again, everyone wanted it to come out for the 360 as well, and Hideo Kojima kept saying, no, it's too big of a game, we can't do it.
Yeah, I think I remember that too. And then, like I was saying later, similar feeling during the Psycho Mantis cutscene. And like, I really thought that we were gonna have to like fight him as well,
Oh,
if only
yes.
briefly.
I did
And then
too.
he does the "I'm going to read your memory card." "Wait,
Yeah.
where's the memory card?" And then he tries to move your controller, and it kind of works, and it's just like, and then you just feel bad because he's trying so hard, and he just gets so exhausted trying to move your controller again, and then he's gone. It's like, you tried.
It was a good callback to, again, the best boss battle of the series. So, I thought that was pretty good.
So that's all I've got from this list.
Cool. So, we'll move into the things we did not really like. And I would like to start out with, I did not like how this game started. It was really confusing. I didn't understand what was going on, and there was constant references to MGS2 and a little bit to MGS1, but a lot of references to MGS2 that I simply did not remember at this point.
So I think part of that may have been because, and this was one of the negative things that I heard about the game a lot before playing it, which is that MGS2 was written with the assumption that it would be, the last in the series, and so it wasn't really supposed to, like it made us it was, well, I don't know, I may want to play it again sometime because I don't think I realized while playing it, oh, it's like a commentary on you playing the game and.
There is I remember I went back to watch someone basically play through it really fast and explain the entire game to me again so that I could understand what the shell Big Shell incident was and stuff like that, what the AIs were, and yeah, there's at the near-ish the end, it is explained to Raiden that he's been led by the AI system this entire time, that it was an AI Campbell and an AI Rose who were leading him through MGS2, and yeah, there's a lot of references to it all being a simulation and a game, and about it how this is how they're training future soldiers, but.
Right. Well, like at the time I was like, "Oh, this is like really funny how it's totally meta," and I
Yeah.
wasn't really thinking about it as an actual commentary. But what I was getting at was like it wasn't really written as a lead into a sequel. And so in 4, they're like, "Oh, we have all of these wild plot threads that we started in 2 and even a few more from 3, and I guess we'll just have to try to explain them all somehow." And I think that was where the especially at the beginning where it's kind of confusing where it tries to lead you from that spaghetti plot nonsense into the current plot.
Well, even the current, like the way, so you show up and Snake is old, and you're in the middle of a combat that you don't understand. They're just saying, like you said in the previous episode of this podcast, like it opens up with just saying war has changed, and that it is now just this constant thing to do for the economy that, and everyone is participating in some fashion in this. In these constant wars, but you don't know why you're here, and you don't know why he's old, and now everything is about nanomachines. Everything is about nanomachines.
Yeah, there's certainly like a kind of feeling where it's like, wait, is this something I'm supposed to know and you're catching me up, or is this all new information?
Yeah.
Am I supposed to have context for this?
It was just a really confusing way to start the game out. Which, like, if it had just started with Act Two of Snake and Otacon are flying around doing their own thing, and suddenly Naomi contacts them through this secret means saying, "Help, guys, Ocelot is alive and he's trying to do this, and I need you to get me out of here." It's like that would have been a great way to lead us into this game and then start showing us what the current plot is. But the way that they decided to do it, where Snake just shows up with this militia for some reason, like, didn't make
Right.
sense to me.
And it's a little also a little weird because like the whole first act I think is supposed to introduce you to this idea of the war economy and nanomachines and like the when you're talking to Merrill and you see the Rat Pit unit working together in perfect sync
Yeah.
except for Johnny, which is not
Again.
explained until the very end.
Yeah, which it was so obvious. Like, he's
Yeah.
having explosive diarrhea. That's probably something to do with why he's not in sync with everyone else. Or, I
Right.
don't know, something.
They're like, wow, nanomachines make us all perfect soldiers, except him, but we're not going to question why. He's just bad at his job for some reason. And anyway, so like I can appreciate that they did the whole have like an introductory act to kind of get you used to this idea before they start building the plot on top of it. And I can also sympathize that like especially when this game has so many long cutscenes and is kind of infamous for it, they didn't want to give you too much non-interactive time before you actually take control of Snake and run around. So like I think that's why you do the mission briefing after walking 100 feet. But the way they did it, I don't think it really succeeded at that. Like, it's designed to introduce you to this concept, but they still dump a whole bunch of info on you right at the beginning that you don't really have context for.
Yeah. Though
So.
I did enjoy the first time geckos show up and it's just mooing and it's like, what?
Yeah, that is one thing I was going to mention as like particularly noteworthy moments, but since you brought it up, it was introduced as a horror movie monster, and that was just like a neat touch. It was literally the the horror trick where Snake is walking through a room and looking left and right, and then some drops of blood fall on him from the ceiling, and he
Yeah.
looks up, and it that just introduced these things as actual monsters, not just some new weapon, but like you should be terrified of this thing, and the graboid tongue, like Tremors, and I'm sure lots of other things where it has that sort of sensing tentacle, is just straight out of a horror movie.
Yeah. Something else that I would like to bring up, which again really ties in with the first two acts. I really disliked the whole having a militia or resistance there, because I was constantly getting confused as to who was not against me and who were members of the PMC who were against me and would shoot at me, alert, whatever, if they saw me. Like, it was really hard to tell, except if you had the solid eye on. Then it would show like a little color next to the person as to like if they're neutral or if they're against you. But it was just a lot of the time I couldn't tell. I couldn't remember who was who, and I really disliked that. I understood that they wanted to make it into a sort of like there's a battle going on and you're trying to either fight your way or sneak your way through it. And in order to have a battle, you need to have two people like fighting. So I understood why they did it. I just really did not like it.
So I didn't even, I was really confused about that in the first act, and I think I either managed to piss off the local or the resistance in the first part, or like I got into the base and was like, oh, they're not attacking me, so I guess we're cool. And then one of them saw me and like had an exclamation point, so
Yeah.
I later found out that like if they see you, they'll be surprised, but if you just stand there, they'll be like, oh, I guess you're okay.
Same
But
thing happened to me.
that's not how Metal Gear Solid works. So when he saw me and was surprised, I turned and ran, and so he shot at me, and
Yep. Yeah, that was
it's
when I decided I would just start tranking everyone.
a lot of my frustrations came down to, oh, it was never communicated to me that that was even an option, and then by the time I realized that, it was already too late. And so I just went through the first act treating them all as enemies,
Yeah.
which still made it slightly more interesting than otherwise, because then, like, they're both a little less likely to see you because they're in the middle of a battle,
Yeah, that's
but
true.
it was still, like, it was still kind of annoying to realize after the fact that there was this whole system of gaining their trust that I didn't even realize was there.
Yeah, I had the same situation come up in the base where you, and I just gave up on it at that point. I was like, nope, not worth it. Because up until then, I had been trying to keep track and using the solid eye to see the colors when I wasn't sure. But yeah, it's just not worth it. Tranks for everyone.
And I kind of got it during the second act when I eventually noticed, oh, these guys that show up with, like, I knew that the Otacon had mentioned that the blue names are allies, but then he was also like, oh, but you don't really have time to stop and help them, so just ignore them. But I eventually figured out, oh, okay, they'll, if they see me, they'll look surprised, but then they'll like me because I shot the other guys. And from what I've read, that's also a lot e like it's easier to get them to like you in the easier modes, whereas it will take a lot more
Oh,
in
really?
the harder modes.
Oh, man.
Like I guess you have to walk up to them and give them rations, and they'll there's you know
What?
a hidden stat for how much they like you. I mean, they won't shoot you, but they'll be suspicious of you, and then you give them rations and they're like, well, okay, and then if you do that enough times, they'll get little hearts.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah, it's a whole, like I said, a whole system that I completely bypassed because I didn't know it was there.
Yeah, the so I want this wasn't something that I wrote down, but I do kind of want to say it where the I felt like the codex system was nowhere near as like useful as it had been in previous games. I
Yeah.
usually when there was like a so like in MGS3, every time you pick up a new weapon, every time you see a new animal, every time you enter a new area, there was new codex to listen to and find out what's going on, what should I be aware of. But that just didn't really happen here. Rose would say pretty much the same thing of, oh, your psych gauge looks good, you're good to go, or your psych gauge is looking dangerously low, you should do this. And Otacon was all over the place as to sometimes he was useful and sometimes he was just repeating something that he had said earlier and was not at all helpful.
Yeah, and there were some legendarily hilarious conversations in MGS3, which again, I'm sure I've told you about many times in high school. But they're the only memorable conversation in 4 was that the one I mentioned where Otacon is just like, wasn't that crazy? And that
And
was sort of, I even found that by accident because I was like, oh, I haven't really been calling Otacon because he doesn't have much interesting to say. I'll see if he says something now.
yeah. A little disappointing, but and especially I had a couple of boss battles where I really wanted some help, because in the previous games, when you're stuck in a boss battle, you just ping the codec a couple of times and they'll give you a hint. But this one, it was like it was the vamp fight that really nailed it home to me of he is Otacon is so enraged against Vamp that he only thing he says is put that guy down, like something to that effect. He doesn't actually tell you anything as to how. And at that point, I had already taken him down 5 times. I would have liked a hint at that point as to how can I keep him down. I'm trying here. Give
Was
me
also
something.
kind of funny because the first time Vamp showed up, and well, maybe not the first time, but in definitely in Act Two, when he's kidnapping Naomi and Snake shoots him right in the forehead, and my first reaction was, because that worked the first 3 times, you did it.
I know, right?
And then a couple of acts later, you're just told to take him down, and it's like, how? We have gone over this. And I did eventually get the hint when Vamp himself said no, because
Yes.
he's a villain. He had to keep. He, I guess felt sorry for me and reminded me, as long as these nano machines run through my veins. And I was like, oh,
Yeah.
right, I have the thing.
That was what clued me in as well, was like the third time he said that, I was like,
Right.
okay, let's take a moment and look through all my inventory and see what I've got. And then I found that syringe, which I had honestly not used a single time in the game.
Me
So
either. I
I.
just at that by that point, I had assumed it was just a thing that happened in cutscenes. I didn't realize it was an item until I started looking through my inventory, like, what can disable nano machines? Is it a chaff grenade? Do I throw a chaff grenade at him?
Yeah, I same thing of I had not used it. I hadn't even realized that it was like an item really. But then reading the description, not only does it say disables nano machines, but then it even instructs you how to use it on someone else. It's like, oh, there you go.
Right. And I actually, and then of course, when we got to the Screaming Mantis fight, I picked
Yeah.
up on that a lot more quickly.
That
And
one, but and again, that one in the codex, like, didn't you just do this with Vamp?
yeah. And one thing that kind of annoyed me though was, well, first time I failed because I couldn't find Meryl after she, got to the point of making Meryl shoot herself. So I was running around looking for her to trank her, but couldn't find her. So on the second attempt, the first thing I did was grab Meryl and stick her with the syringe to disable her nano machines.
Yeah.
And then the next cutscene, she took over Meryl again. It's like, come on.
I tried the I fought her 3 times, just because the first time I couldn't even do damage. The second time I finally figured out how to do damage, but I wasn't very good at it, and then Meryl died. The third time was when I was like, okay, I know exactly what to do. And so when Meryl points the gun at her, I'm like, I was already in the center area because I knew she would be doing that. So I was able to shoot before. Yeah. Third time
Nice.
through, I was like, I know how to do this fight. But.
And speaking of the bosses, like I said before, one of the things that I found really frustrating was the reward you get for taking them down, for taking down the beast mode non-lethally, is you get a doll, which I also got from the frogs because they count as a boss, and if you take them down without killing any of them, you get a little frog doll. And if you get the dolls for all of the bosses through the game, you unlock a solar gun, which I guess is some incredibly powerful but non-lethal weapon.
Oh,
So that's
really?
cool. The problem is, the doll appears during the beauty phase somewhere in the level, and you have to go pick it up during that fight.
Oh, really?
And I didn't know that until after Crying Wolf, so, three of the four bosses. I was like, so wait, is the face camo of them the bonus for non-lethal, or what am I supposed to be getting for taking down the beast mode non-lethally? And I looked it up and found that out, and so it was like, And then even better when I did that for Screaming Mantis, which not only was that fight kind of frustrating for a couple of different reasons, I was trying to use the non-lethal one of the two dolls, but it doesn't work. You just have to use the Mantis doll, which says it's lethal, but if you use it on her, it counts as non-lethal because that's the only thing that works. So
Oh, really?
that was really confusing and badly communicated, but by that point, I knew to go get the doll, so I did, and I got an achievement. So I said, oh, so I should have been getting achievements for taking all of these bosses down non-lethally, but I haven't because I haven't been picking up the dolls afterward.
Oh.
And you too, apparently.
Wow. I guess this is one of those times where they expect you to look it up online or in a walkthrough on your second or third playthrough, which,
I
again,
guess.
not good design, but
No.
it would be a nice little, oh, look at the secret, I guess. I wanted to bring up as far as the beauties and the beasts, and more so, I think you had a problem with this kind of as well, but just all of the female characters are either in skin tight suits or they're showing off their cleavage, like all of their cleavage, and it's like a little too much. It really
Yeah,
is.
especially the B&B core, the Beast and Beauty core, which was like, well, okay, when I was just looking up what the actual name of the core was on the wiki a few minutes ago, I looked at him and it was like, oh yeah, here's a side note. Hideo Kojima wanted them to be completely naked during
Oh my
the beauty
God,
portion,
really?
which is like, no, but it makes sense that he wanted that because that is just really awkwardly like pretty much naked cat suits and lots of boob jiggle during the cutscenes where they're like, you know, crying about their horrible,
Yeah.
horrible traumatic childhoods and like and crawling towards Snake.
A lot of crawling,
It was
yeah.
just really, really uncomfortable on multiple levels. The note I put here is they really put the porn in tragedy porn.
Yeah, but all of the female, like, Naomi was really odd seeing dressed that way.
Yeah.
And then it was like over the top at the point where you get to Big Mama, which is Eva, I guess, from
Eva.
MGS3, where again, like, yeah, that was fitting for her character there, and she was like the only female character doing it there. But now it's like all of the female characters are doing it, and it's like, no, please stop.
Also, I actually really liked Eva, except where it kind of seemed like she was hitting on Snake
A little bit.
after the whole, like, yeah, I literally gave birth to you. It was a little weird. And then it was like that, and then 10 minutes of exposition about AI conspiracies later, it's like, boy, you really remind me of that guy I wanted to fuck and never got to.
Yeah. I did enjoy that for just the monologue and the explanation of what's been going on. Why did we get to this point? Like it was finally answering questions.
Yes, that was the
But
point where I was talking with some other people online while I was playing it, and they mentioned that, you know, their head spinning at that point. But I thought that was the point where it actually started to make sense.
yeah. And then I did like that, hey, we've got Big Boss, but then it was also one of those things of this was a huge flag of don't go find Big Boss. That's how everyone else will find Big Boss. But
Yes.
yeah, but overall I didn't like the clothing or the it was just overly sexualized, and it didn't help that I was playing another game that was kind of overly sexualizing female characters too at the same time. Just like too much Japan. Please rein it back.
Which you did put in the notes, but for the podcast, Tokyo Mirage Sessions, Sharp
Yes.
FE.
A
Or is that?
again, very Japanese game.
Right. Which always reads to me as hashtag Fire Emblem, but I think
Yes.
that it's officially supposed to be Sharp FE.
That's how everyone says it for some reason. Was there anything else that you did not like about MGS4?
The whole thing with Otacon and Naomi was really painfully awkward, and part of it was just because, like, okay, it's been like 10 years. He doesn't have to be like horribly awkward around women that show a little bit of cleavage now. But also, let's be perfectly honest, Snake and Otacon were pretty much married at that point.
Yes.
And
I was so preoccupied at that point with what is she trying to do with that USB that I didn't even
right.
realize that she was hitting on him until like she gave up on using the USB and was instead like getting him into the helicopter. I was like, oh, I somehow missed that, but okay. Really did not understand what her motivation was throughout most of this game.
And so that was just like so awkwardly, I mean, it was also just awkwardly done, but it also, I don't know, maybe it was the sort of I guess the technical term is queer baiting, which is sort of, implying a gay couple but never quite stating it outright. I don't know that that was the intention for Snake and Otacon, but it was also like it kind of, felt like subtext. And then Naomi starts hitting on Otacon, and it's like, wait, your Snake's right there. What are you doing? And it was in a less awkward but still a little bit of a weird vein was the fact that they took the running joke diarrhea soldier that's been in every game, or his grandfather who somehow was in Russia in the third game, Johnny Sasaki, and like made him a super important character, and then had him hook up with Meryl,
That
which that
I
was kind of weird. I did, I'll admit, I actually kind of like the twist of like, oh, he's incompetent because, as for some reason, nobody was obvious, but nobody mentioned until the end. He clearly does not have these nanomachines somehow, which makes him bad at his job. But then that means he can save everyone when the nanomachines are hacked. That was a pretty good twist, but it was still like, oh, the diarrhea guy is really important, and he's does the secretly hot under his masks the whole time thing, and has this also extended to the point of, okay, we get it scene or series of scenes where he rescues Meryl and then they get married, and was just he's not that interesting of a character. He's
No.
just the guy that always has diarrhea.
Never once was he interesting. He kind of saves her life at the end of Act 3 and then shows up in the nick of time in the end of Act 5. Like that's all we really experience of him and other than being completely hopeless in Act 1.
And then Meryl goes, "Oh, I'm so sorry for, judging you, because it turned out there was a good reason for you to not be in sync with the group." No, the reason he's not in sync was because
He doesn't like shots.
he was avoid he knew that this would actually make him competent at his job, but he avoided it for a really stupid reason. It's like, I don't like shots, so I'm just not going to get these nanomachines that make everybody magically really good at being soldiers. But I'm still going to go on missions and put everybody in danger because I don't know what I'm doing.
There's a lot of cringe at the end of this game. There's the. Well, so I want to back up a little bit. I thought it was really interesting that leading up to this, at the end of Act 3, we have Big Mama die. At the end of Act 4, we have Raiden appear to die. But like at that point, we think he's dead. And then in near the end of Act 5, we have Meryl staying behind. And it looks like, oh, she's going to also sacrifice herself. Like, at this point, it looks like everybody is going to die. And then it's swapped as, no, actually, except for Big Mama, they're all going, and I also forgot to mention, Naomi dies at the end of Act 4. I never understood why she had to die. Like, that never made sense. It's like, 2-minute explanation of, oh, I also have been using nanomachines to stay alive because of cancer, and now I'm going to inject myself so that I die along with Vamp. Like, were they lovers? I don't know why you then decided to die here, but you planned it out, I guess, because then the entire end sequence, but anyways, doesn't make sense.
That
But
really didn't make sense, but yes.
then the ending where everybody is okay, and like to a cringe level of the two of them are getting married right then and there. Meryl and Johnny are getting married on a tarmac, and it's like,
Well,
why? But
I figured that that was after some time had passed, and they were just like, "Oh, we're both soldiers. We'll do a weird thing in Snake's plane."
So they're getting married, and then at the same time we're getting a cutscene of Raiden, who is now back looking like a human, has arms, and Rose comes in and is like, "Hey, you know how I was like completely avoiding you and left you and lying to you? Turns out that I loved you the entire time, and I was only doing that because we now have a son that you've never met or known existed, but you should love and care for." And I was just like, "Yes, there's."
Also, yes, I did remarry someone who's
Oh my God.
old enough to be my father, but it was all a ruse to keep me safe. Because being around you, who was going on secret missions opposing the Patriots, was too dangerous. So I pretended to marry this colonel who is leading secret missions, maybe against the
It
Patriots.
really doesn't make sense, and it was just pure cringe to me, but
But hey, you know, at least he got a son because he's not gonna be able to do that again.
I don't know. Was he human at the end? But then there's Revengeance, where he's again a cyborg. I don't get it.
Oh, no, that was maybe I know this because of other people talking about Raiden, but like that was his like looks more like a human paint job for his body. He's got like he's basically got the RoboCop where everything from his upper half of his jaw up and maybe some internal organs in his spine are human, and everything else is robot parts that when he feels like can be painted skin colored.
Okay. It doesn't make sense, but
No,
okay.
but
Glad they
this was
survive, I
the
guess.
There's a web comic I really like called Manly Guys Doing Manly Things, and the artist, among other things, really likes Raiden, and there was a comic about how he has really fantastic hair, and he's just like, well, you know, when the only part of you that's still real is like from the top half of your teeth up, you really take care of it.
I guess he doesn't take care of the rest of him. Like, he can't go through a single battle without just bleeding everywhere.
No, no.
Which, I mean, Snake doesn't have that problem. Come on.
Well, there was that knife during the confrontation with Liquid, which was
And still
a
not
different.
bleeding everywhere.
Well, that's true too. It was a different kind of cringe because the whole during that whole cutscene with all of the soldiers and his hacking thing, the whole time I was like, for the love of God, someone take out that knife.
No, it just stays there.
Yeah, one of my other minuses is kind of going off of that. It was like, we almost made a plot that kind of makes sense. So during the final cutscenes, we have to retcon half of it and, you know, the motives and the reasons for all of these things to happen to make sure it makes a lot less sense than you thought it did.
Yeah. I
Like,
mean,
the
it's all
whole,
wrapped up,
oh,
I guess, but
yeah. It's like the whole, oh, just kidding, I wasn't really married to him, it was a ruse. And, oh, well, it turns out that the Patriots were really helping you all along because they didn't expect that Deus Ex Machina at the end, and otherwise you were just helping them. And all that stuff. And, which I feel like we haven't mentioned it, so we'll get to that later, but also the post credits, even more explaining of the things they already explained.
Yeah, like there's an epilogue with Big Boss, who
See, that was the part I was like, well, we haven't mentioned it yet, so maybe we'll wait until I bring it up specifically, but
I didn't expect that, to be honest. 'Cause so one thing that I thought was interesting is that the menu scene has Snake coming to a graveyard, and doing the salute, and like that's the opening like menu cut scene, which if you let run long enough, will the camera will move away and you'll hear a gunshot.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
At least that's, I believe. But I know they do a similar thing in the actual end cutscene where it looks like
Yes.
Snake's about to commit suicide.
And
He.
it's even like so much detail on him putting the gun into
Yes.
his mouth.
Yeah. And it really, like, at that point, you're completely led up to believe that he needs to kill himself, otherwise he's going to become a weapon of mass destruction himself because of the
Right.
nanomachine or the fox die that was in him from the very first MGS
Right, that's going to
game.
be mutating and killing everybody.
It's degrading, so the markers that are prote like making it so that it only affects one specific person or whatever, those markers are leaving or dropping away. So, like, he's soon going to kill everyone because of this fox die.
Right, so
And
that.
so he's going here, doing his salute, going to kill himself. And Otacon
Right.
obviously knows this.
Right. And he yeah, I that was really sad when he was like, "Oh,
Yeah,
Snake's
explaining
got
to
a
Sunny.
he's gone on a trip. I don't know when he'll be back, but don't hold your breath." But yeah, I was going to say that leads into the particularly noteworthy your like OMG moments, which was really great because of course, it has that scene after Snake pulls the trigger and you see Otacon and Sunny, and it's like, oh, bittersweet ending. Credits, and then at that, like I mentioned, I was like chatting with some other people about it when I was playing, and so at that point, I was like, okay, here's the credits. I'll pull out my phone and look at some other things and kind of half pay attention to the credits, and then I look up, and the last thing on the credits is Big Boss, Richard
Yeah.
Doyle. And I go, wait, Big Boss wasn't in the. Wait, what? That was just such a good reveal and transition. And then it goes from that to, spoiler alert, Snake not being dead.
No. And Big Boss arrives to then truly explain what all of that was, what Naomi's plan was. What Zero's plan was, like, he explains then everything. And also, for some reason, it exposes himself purposefully to the fox die.
Yeah,
And I'm just
I don't
like,
know.
what? Why? But then also telling us, oh, but you get to live. Because the other nanomachines that were added into your system are actually replacing the fox die, so you're not going to become that weapon of mass destruction anymore.
Right,
And
you're still going to die relatively soon because
yeah,
you're aging, but you don't you get
three
to like
months.
you still but yeah, the point is that he gets to, spend that time with his family and friends instead of having to go off and shoot himself alone so that he doesn't endanger them. And that was nice. And of course, the when Big Boss first showed up with the gun, which I'm not sure why he showed up with a gun except to look badass and that make Snake think he was gonna kill him, since they kind of tried to kill each other before. And they go into the whole battle, and it just turns into an aggressive dad hug.
It does.
And he's just, and it just it's just like, no, it's okay, son. It's okay. Cry it out. I'm
Yeah.
here. I'm finally here to be a dad for 2 seconds.
I liked that final segment answered questions, and it then allowed the ending to be on a more cheerful note. But it was still just, why have such a substantial plot dump or rewrite or retcon at that point in the story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it would have worked better if it had been a lot shorter.
And why
an epilogue?
Why did Snake have to go through that microwave hallway, which honestly should have killed him? Why did he have to get through that hallway if the Mark III could have just gone through the hallway and done it? Because that's all that happened anyways, was he got through the hallway, then the Mark III did the rest. Like, wasn't needed. I don't know.
I was wondering about that during that whole dramatic scene, and I came to the conclusion that the Mark III is too small for the door triggers to censor.
Yeah, I did not understand.
That's the only...
Oh, I guess.
The only reason I can think of is that it's like... you know, it's like automatic doors at a convenience store. If you're too small, they won't open, even if the door's unlocked.
I guess. It just didn't make sense that he had to go through that. It didn't make sense. The injections never once made sense, especially at the end, where the... So that final boss fight is pretty epic at the end of Act 5, where you're against it's Snake versus Ocelot / Liquid. And it's just a fist fight. And it is pretty epic. But it never once makes sense why the two of them are just constantly injecting themselves with this anti-nanomachine serum.
Yeah.
How
that
does
was
that...
one of those things where it's like, oh, we found a cool concept, which is, you know, you have to, when your, you know, nanomachines are freaking out or being hacked, you use this to disable them. But then it's like they took that concept of the syringe to, you know, for Snake to suppress that and just used it everywhere, even though it didn't make sense.
Yeah, anytime Snake's in pain, oh, just inject him, he's fine now. It's like, no, that's not how that should work.
Yeah.
But, and same with, like, Vamp, where you hit him with those the serum. Vamp at that point drops down to 1 HP. Like, anything at this point should kill him. How does he then have a substantial fight against Raiden?
That was something that I kind of expected as soon as he showed up, but which was a little bit disappointing nonetheless, was... It was just a little disappointing to go from Metal Gear Solid to, oh, he's just immortal because of reasons. And he's not named Vamp because he's a vampire. He's named Vamp because he's gay. Which was a weird codec conversation into, but it's just this whole, like, we're going to patently refuse to explain any of this. And then as soon as he showed up in 4, I was like, they're going to explain it, aren't they?
Yeah.
And they did.
And it's nanomachines. Everything is nanomachines.
Nanomachines, son.
Was there anything else that you wanted to bring up as a noteworthy moment?
It was just the old man fight on top of the ship, like you said. That was awesome.
Yes.
The way that, and partly the fact that it cycles through the games, and partly the fact that you are just gradually beating the Liquid out of Ocelot.
Which, again, is explained later on as he never actually was Liquid.
Right.
At all.
Which kind of, which they did hint at, which was sort of like, this is not going to make any sense until an hour of cutscenes later, but the fact that he finally tears off his jacket and he doesn't even have Liquid's arm anymore. It's a cyber arm.
Yeah.
but the way that played out and the fact that, like, oh, it's not just you have to punch him. Now you have a new set of controls and this is a mini fighting game and you actually have to figure out how to fight him.
It's kind of like the end of God of War again, except not as bad. I did have some problems with it, but overall, it was pretty good. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, and they did such a great job of doing... Well, first of all, they had this extended fight between the two of them first, and then when you actually fight him, they did such a great job of, like, you would hit punch, and in certain situations, it would change to this dynamic camera angle of just, like, knocking him down, or you would both punch each other in the face at the same time, or get into the, you know, CQC of, like, countering each other and grabbing and throwing, and it was just done so well and so epic.
It was a lot of fun, even if I did suck at it for the first two attempts. It was fun.
Well, I thought I did okay, but lost on the first attempt because early on I realized, oh wait, I can hit select and it will actually tell me what all the buttons do.
Oh, I never even thought of that. No,
Yeah,
my.
that makes it a lot easier because it tells you, oh, you do this to do a strong punch and you do this to do a
Oh,
body
that would
jab and
have made it easier.
yeah. And then, you know, of course I beat him and then I had to play it a few more times because as I told you, I finished the game with one kill, which was frustrating, and so I went back to the beginning of Act 5 and played through it again and got one kill again and played through it a third time.
Who do you keep killing?
I don't know. But the third time it must have been soldiers in the Mantis fight is all I can think of. Of course, the third time I decided I'm going to every time I have the opportunity to save, I'm going to save because I had to look this up, but if you go to a mission briefing from the mission briefing menu option and load a game, the little scrolling bar in the middle of the briefing will tell you your stats for that save file, not for when
Oh.
you did the briefing. So I could go back to a save and load a mission briefing and see like, okay, immediately after the deck of the ship, do I have any kills? So of course
Very cool.
on the third attempt where I say I'm going to save at every opportunity, and this will tell me exactly where I killed someone by accident, that time I didn't.
There you go. That's a lot more effort than I'm going to ever put into these games. And I was looking, so I looked up your pigeon emblem, and I was like, that's pretty impressive. Got through the entire game without killing anyone. But I also looked at some of them, and it's like hardest difficulty, 0 kills, 0 alerts, 0 health, 5 hours to get. And I'm
Oh
like,
yeah.
who in the world is playing this game like that? That's crazy to me.
Yeah. Well, they always have those that are just completely ridiculous that I would never even try to get, but I do think that was what was I gonna Yeah, in VR missions, I found out that in Japan to unlock certain in J Japan it was one of those director's cuts where they re-released the full game with VR missions as extras, but to unlock things in the VR missions you had to get certain ranks. So there's like certain VR missions you had to get the big boss rank. So fortunately in the US it was sold as a separate game, which meant that those weren't tied together. It was just like complete 90% of the other missions, and this one will unlock. Anyway, the last really funny moment for me was during the Shadow Moses mission. There's a part where you it was I think the field where you fight first in the original game. First, you have to sneak through and avoid all of the mines there, and then later you go through again and you have to fight the tank. So when I went through, when I saw that field, the first thing I did was drop down and crawl and just crawl across, which of course, as you mentioned on the Facebook page, I did that a lot in this game because the first time I beat it, I got the inchworm ranking for just crawling everywhere. So I was crawling across and in my full camo with the face camo, and there was a short scene where the geckos that are sleeping there wake up and start looking around. So I thought, okay, cool. I'm already lying down in the snow with almost complete cover. They want me to get into this boss battle, but I'm just going to wait for it to turn around. So it walks up. First, it looks around, and then it walks up to me, and I'm like, there's no alert. Okay, it doesn't see me yet. And it brings out its little horror movie monster tentacle sensor thing and sort of hovers around, and I'm like, nope, you can't. I'm thermally camouflaged. This isn't gonna work. And then it lifts up its leg over me, and I go, okay, fuck it. then I jump up and trigger the alert and start shooting it with a rocket launcher.
Nice. I just, I always, when I sneak, I cling to the wall. And yeah, I had no problem getting past them in that area by just clinging to the wall. I don't know how you would get through. So like I said, some of these achievements are like no alerts. And I'm not sure, do the geckos create alerts if they see you?
I think yes, they do.
Then how do you get through the whole babysitting the Mark III segment where there's a gecko that notices the Mark III and goes after it? Like, how do you get through that without setting off an alert distracting the gecko?
Well, I tried killing it, but for some reason, starting with that one, they were just able to deflect my rockets. And, I think, I mean, I didn't bother with the no alert, so I just kept shooting at it. But I think the, what you were supposed to do was either figure out a way to kill it without it seeing you, or just, like, make a noise and then sneak around to another part and make a noise so that it keeps looking for you.
Hmm. I would just shoot its legs and then run to a different corner. That tended to work. But it did set off a lot of alerts. I was always setting off alerts, which, again, is why I decided to just start tranking as much as I could. Which, again, is a great way to turn off alerts. I mean, you set someone off, you trank them before they call out, done.
Mm-hmm. Oh, another detail that I didn't realize until I was, like, looking up, looking up tips because I couldn't figure out where that one kill was, but apparently if you trank someone, if you headshot someone,
yes,
and they drop, then when they wake up, they'll just be like, that's weird. I guess I fell asleep in the middle of the job standing up. But if you hit them in the chest and they have a little exclamation point and then drop a few seconds later, then when they wake up, they'll trigger the caution state. Because they'll be like, oh, someone shot me with a tranquilizer dart 2 minutes ago, but we should still probably be on the lookout.
Yeah. Again,
I didn't bother with the headshots every time, so I didn't even realize that.
I've always been impressed by the AI in these Metal Gear Solid games. Just like how they'll react to things or how well they'll find you when they are in the cautionary mode. Compared to like MGS1, where everyone had the cones and it was really predictable as to like their paths and being able to hide, and MGS1 was really easy to just get around and game the AI. But starting with MGS2, the AI was vastly improved to the point where I remember there was a situation that still amazed me, but I created some noise which caused one of the guards to leave his standard loop and ended up running into another guard, and they had an interaction. Like, these two guards who normally would never meet would then have an interaction between the two of them. And I was just, like, amazed at that.
That's awesome.
And that was back in the PS2. So, yeah, there were moments in MGS3 where I was honestly impressed by some of the AI going on, though there wasn't any like one moment like that where I could say the AI was on point, but just in general they had so refined it at this by this game that I constantly impressed, and I would like to try out MGS5 at some point. I know I have Ground Zeroes for the PlayStation 4, so I'll be playing that eventually and seeing how even again improved things are with that. Also, before we start wrapping this up too much, I do need to say that the Metal Gear battle was amazing.
Yes.
Rex versus Rey. Like, the whole fist fight theme was great, but the fan service of Rex versus Rey, even if Rex didn't have his railgun anymore, just amazing.
And even at earlier when you meet Rex, or when you get to Rex, and Otacon's like, okay, well, we're kind of trapped here. I'm going to try to hack this. And I'm like, wait a minute, am I going to get to actually pilot a Metal Gear? Finally, in a Metal Gear game.
Yeah.
And it was even better than I expected. That was just and also it does remind me, it was kind of funny to me that it's always been the case in the Metal Gear Solid games. I guess it didn't really come up in two, but the idea that what makes the these Metal Gears dangerous to the world is that it's, you know, a mobile platform for launching nukes from anywhere in the world. And that's
Yes.
obviously, you know, scary on a global scale, but you don't really interact with that. It's just in the games, it's like, oh, it's a tank with a bunch of guns, or it's a giant robot with all of these weapons and sensors and things. And so the supposedly scariest and most important part of it, that it can launch nuclear warheads, is not something you interact with directly in the game at all. So in this game, they literally just took that part off, and you got to mess around with the whole giant robot with weapons thing.
Yep.
And then an amazing revelation in what if instead of launching nukes from a walking robot covered in lasers and machine guns, you fired it from a submarine? I don't know. I just thought that was funny that they somehow came around to the actual way that that works.
Yeah. Outer Haven, I do not understand. Is it heaven or haven? Anyways,
Haven.
I do not understand how the design of that ship works, but it was a fun level and it was just a good moment seeing it come out of the water with Shadow Moses. It was a lot of fun. So.
The whole Shadow Moses act was fantastic
Yes.
from start to finish.
All right. Is there anything else that you would like to bring up?
Nope, that's it.
What did you think about the game overall?
I really enjoyed it. There were some frustrating decisions of just not communicating that there were things that you could do in the first place, but overall, I really enjoyed it. The plot didn't make any sense in the end, but I expected that you know, that it would be like, oh, I totally expected them to present a plot and then say, oh, but that's not really what happened, but actually this is what happened, but oh, we didn't mention that the real reasons and motivations were this and that, and so that would have been completely frustrating if it weren't any Metal Gear Solid game.
I really enjoyed MGS4. A large part of it is the controls and the music, and just there are some really great moments throughout that. I don't know if I would go back and replay Act One all that often, but the rest of it was definitely enjoyable enough that I want to spend more time with some of the like the Mark II and the Mark III of really learning how to use that as a way of scouting and sneaking around, finding more secrets. I'm sure there are a ton of secrets in this game, Easter eggs that I never found and would definitely be worth finding in the future, but
Yep. There's actually a secret that is a reference to a secret thing in Metal Gear Solid 1, which is that you can go around Shadow Moses and take pictures with the digital camera and find ghosts in the pictures.
oh, really?
Which was a thing in Shadow Moses in the first game.
Huh. I know, like, now I've unlocked the Tux, so trying that out would be fun. And I kind of want to know what the use of the face masks are. Like, I'm sure there's, like, in MGS3, you have that face mask of Raiden that you can then use at one point in the game to impersonate the officer that you're searching for. A neat little thing that you wouldn't even have this mask if you didn't answer a question at the very beginning of the game about. So,
Right.
like,
I
that's a
think.
really cool little secret that normally, like, some people would never even experience. And I'm sure there's a lot of that hiding somewhere in this game that I would probably have to look up to find, but I expect that kind of stuff to be there, knowing Kojima.
I think in three that mask is in your inventory, or it's given to you at some point if you didn't
Is
pick it
it
at the
given?
beginning.
Oh, okay.
Because, later, of course, it's actually part of the plot that you have to use that to sneak in, and then, this is Hideo Kojima, so there's no way he's not going to have the villain grab your crotch if that's in the game.
I guess that's true. Okay. But yeah, definitely liked this game, and I will probably replay portions of it in the future. But I do want to play MGS5 at some point first.
I'm not sure if I'll play 5 just because I kind of feel done with the series, and I also feel like I don't know how true it is, but it seemed to me like MGS Portable Ops was an important part of Big Boss's story, and I never played that. I
I haven't
assume that
played
they don't
that
make it,
either.
since it was a PSP game, I assume they didn't make it vital because not that many people will have played it.
Was it called Portable Ops or Peace Walker?
Oh no, you're right. Portable Ops was a different game. Peace Walker was the important one.
Yeah, which I remember when it was first announced, I thought it was called MGS5 Peace Walker, but then I guess because it was a PSP game, I think that's why they dropped the 5, but I don't know. I want to say it was originally announced as 5 Peace Walker, but I could be wrong on that. But yeah, that was fun game. So with that, we close out MGS4, but we're not done with fourth games yet, because coming up in December, we'll be playing Uncharted 4, A Thief's End. And yes, that is a game that came out this year. So that's a first for us. Playing all these old games from previous generations, and now we're going to finally play one on this generation. So I am excited about that. The next episode for Uncharted 4 should be coming out December 25th, our Christmas present to you all. Any last words from you, David?
Happy Hanukkah. I have no idea when Hanukkah is, but just for the record. You'd think I would know that.
I think it's. I have no idea. I have no idea. Okay, but yeah, signing out.